Good morning. How's everybody today? We've had a good crowd this weekend. Why is that? There was more people than usual at four, and I think there's a few more people than normal here. So, hey, it's good to come to church. The catechumens are here this morning. This is the second Sunday of the Lenten season, and it's the week that we do what's called the first scrutiny. A scrutiny really is a prayer of preparation as the catechumens get closer now, 5 or 6 weeks, to their baptism and in some cases full reception into the Catholic Church. I don't know the particulars or the origins, but I know the scrutiny prayers are very early, to use kind of a scary word, you know. Part of the prayer is really an exorcism, because it's a prayer for the catechumen, the unbaptized, to break the lie of sin. Now, that doesn't mean they're any worse than any of the rest of us. There's a prayer of exorcism in the baptismal rite. That's why we're baptized, so that we become people of light, and that the darkness of evil, sin, and death will have no more power over us. I sure wish that would mean we never sin again. How about you? Like St. Augustine, hey, Lord, make me pure, make me holy.
But not yet.
Today would be a good day. So I'm glad you're here. I've met several of you. I think I really know all of you except the guy in the end there. You are? Coy? Are you Coy? And there's Henry and Mai and Pam and Shelley and Eric. And there's one not here because he's ill. So there'll be those prayers after the homily. And I will be away next weekend. No loud cheering, please. Father Bob will be here. Go ahead, cheer. I know you love him. I know you love him, and he only preaches a third of the time I do. I'm going to make him take an extra collection for that. There'll be another Franciscan Capuchin here on Saturday. Next weekend, as you would guess, is the Inner Healing Retreat at Manresa. You know, they really haven't been as large for the 15 or more years we've been doing that. It's always been full with a waiting list. But since COVID, they are smaller now. So if you're interested in going to the Inner Healing Retreat, they do have room. You could call them this week, and it's not too late to register for that. The Transfiguration really is a theophany. It's a revelation of God. And I don't know how else to help people understand, but I don't know how much people think about going to heaven. I don't know how much people think about what the glory of God is going to be like when we get there. I myself don't think about it a whole lot. I believe I'm going to get there. Do you think you're going to go to heaven?
Yes.
Well, a lot more people on this side think they're going to go than the people on that side. What time are you folks going to wake up? Never mind. Now, I'm not saying that because I'm so wonderful, and I'm not saying that you're so wonderful. You are all wonderful. God thinks you're wonderful. We're going to heaven not because we're all so wonderfully good. We're going to heaven because God is good. That's the reality of our profession of faith. We're creatures and sinners. What it means to be human is to be sinful, but that's not your deepest identity. Your deepest identity is your divine parent, God who gave you life. Can you tell I'm speaking to the catechumens? I am. Have you ever seen the glory of God in a person? Yeah. Oh, don't be shy. We should see it all the time, really. Oh, I told the story at the 4 o'clock Mass. Years ago, I think I was still a seminarian, and I was working at a parish in Northville, groundskeeping and cleaning the church and things like that. Yeah, I know how to do those things. And I was out trimming grass or something in the front of the parish that day, and there was a young lady who walked by in the sidewalk, and she was clearly late in a pregnancy. And I got to tell you, that lady glowed. I said hello, she said hello, kept going, and I went back to doing the lawn. And I thought to myself, wow, that lady must really be happy to be pregnant. I mean, really, I mean, that was 50, almost 50 years ago. Oh my God, I need a nap. No, really. Now, this is going to sound really odd, but there was another time when I had first left, after I left the seminary as the spiritual director, and I went to St. Lucie's, as you know, in St. Clair Shores. Now, this is going to sound odd, but within the first couple of weeks that I was there, there was a younger woman married, and I don't remember if they had kids. I think they did, a couple of kids. And Marie had breast cancer, and she was reasonably early in her cancer, but it was a serious cancer. And she asked me to be her spiritual director, and so, of course, you know, we would meet as her illness progressed. And she and her husband, Phil, really obviously were very distressed because as things grew evident that she would not survive. But I have to tell you, the family and the hospice person called me as she grew near her death. And honestly, I don't remember. Again, forgive me. I think she was still breathing when I got there. She was not conscious, but I think she was still alive. And so I could anoint her. You don't anoint a dead person. So, but she was still living, so I anointed her. We prayed. Husband and other family were there. And I kid you not, within an hour, less than an hour, because I didn't quite stay that long, within an hour, she smiled after she had passed. There was a smile on her face. Why do you think she smiled? Because she was in the glory of God. I said it was an odd story. But that happened almost 50 years ago, not 50, but 25 years ago. I don't remember a particular case, but, you know, the inner healing retreat, actually someone just mentioned after we have dinner after the healing mass, which was yesterday, and totally forgot what I was going to say. Hang on for 15 minutes. I'll think of it. Oh, yeah. When we start the retreat on the Friday evening, it's a pretty heavy mood. People come with all kinds of weights and pains and life experiences and traumas and whatnot. But by Sunday, the whole mood is really very different. It really is a great work of God. And although I can't particularly specifically name someone right now, there's been any number of times, because we have a praise and worship session on Saturday evening. Jim is there, and he's doing the music and whatnot. And we're praying over people for a good hour or longer. I mean, the session lasts about that long. And many people, you can literally see the glory or the grace of God. Their countenance, their awareness is just awakened in a way that was not awakened before. Why am I spending time telling you this? Because the glory of God is already in us. It's not in some of us. It's in all of us. I won't take the time today, but I did tell a little bit of the story. We had the funeral for Kathy Campbell yesterday. Kathy was only 67. It was just about a year ago when she and her husband Neil sat right over there in the second row, right in front of Aurora and her husband. Yeah, you know what I mean. That's where they were sitting. Anyway, and I didn't know them before. They're neighbors of Pam and Marty Smith across the street. And so she had this pancreatic cancer, and she lasted almost a year. That's amazing in itself. pancreatic cancer patients don't last that long. But her husband explained that she really was a devout Catholic, went to Regina High School, St. Bartholomew Grade School, and this and that and the other thing, and raised her kids, and really was a very good mom, loved her family, loved her kids, a very self-giving person. But by the time I met them and saw them, she really was really losing a vibrancy in her face because she was seriously ill. Well, they had a picture of her at the funeral yesterday. And I thanked Neil for bringing the picture, because I could see Kathy when she was healthy. Her face was full, she had a smile on her face, her hair obviously was done. And I said, well, thank you. Now that she's in the glory of God, and I visited her and anointed and prayed with them four or five days, maybe it was three, before she passed. But you see, get that in your mind. Because it has to do with the reality of the transfiguration. Now you know, but I know you don't think about it. I don't think about it actively either. But in terms of a theme for today, the reality is God is hidden in plain sight. He's right here, right now, for all of us to see. But you have to have the eyes and the willingness of mind and heart and faith to be willing to see that, right? Now, if we were comfortable enough and not quite so, you know, whatever about ourselves and everybody else, if you really looked around and looked into people's faces, there's a lot of people here, you could see the glory of God within them or upon them. And maybe you don't even have to look at them. I'm not going to embarrass anybody by saying, well, I can see the glory of God in that one and in that one. That's going, well, do you see the glory of God in me? I'm not going there. If you see it, someone else is going to see it. If you believe it, they're going to see it all the more. God is hidden in plain sight so often. We don't know it until we do know it, but the truest and most real things in life take us the greater part of our lives to realize and recognize and accept. But that's our faith in Christianity. Now, if you want a 30-second definition or expression of Christianity, Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ will come again. And he's all over this place like white on Christ. Spaghetti sauce. I just wanted to make you think twice. He's all over the place. But you have to believe. You can't just go through a program. You can't just sit and read a few books and, oh, you know, learn a few things. You may didn't get a teaspoonful. Is about how much you got in that program you did and you're still doing in terms of what's out there to know and understand and embrace. It's the source and identity of our lives. Now, we know this in different kinds of ways, but there are times in our lives that love is such a mystery and it befuddles us. Maybe for teenagers who fall in love for the first time and it doesn't work out and they want to just disappear and pull their hair out. And if we talk about the love of God, it's supposed to be a mystery. If we can figure God out, if you got God figured out, it's not God you figured out. With that, suffering in many cases, not always, but suffering in many cases is very difficult to understand and even harder to accept. But for ourselves as Christians, we believe in a God of love who is the essence of love. There's nothing in God without love. I'm talking to the catechumens again because you've heard it 100 times already. There's nothing in God but the essence of love. But God's so humble, empties himself and becomes incarnate, becomes one like us, fully human, fully divine, without sin. So in that incarnation of Christ, who is the essence of love, and who we profess to be the Christ, he willingly, with obedient surrender, chooses to accept dying on the cross. Did he want to die on the cross? He did not. But he wanted to save and set us free. And it took the death of God. Was love killed on that cross? It was not. The body of Jesus was killed. And it is not incorrect to say that God died in the person of Christ. But by the power of the divine love, that is the essence of love, the Father and the Spirit raises up the body, person, life of Jesus, who represents us. So from Paul, we are buried with Christ. When Christ dies, we die with Christ. So sin dies with the death of Christ, and we are raised up with him. Are you listening? There might be a quiz. So today we ponder the Transfiguration. The Transfiguration, as you know, it reveals the glorified person of Jesus, Jesus in his glorified state, while he's in the presence of Peter, James, and John. The biblical tradition interprets generally, historically, is really about not only the confirmation of the identity of Jesus, the divine Son of God, but it's really about the anticipation of the death of Jesus. It's to help the leading disciples, Peter, James, and John, so that they can give witness to this vision at the appropriate time, so they're not consumed in the trauma of the horrendous death of Jesus. Now notice, because it sets the scene, that the Transfiguration takes place after the first prediction that Jesus makes of his death. Before the second prediction, and there's a third prediction, but between the first and the second, we have this Transfiguration. Now, the first time Jesus prescribed, the Son of Man will be arrested. He will be interrogated by the Pharisees and the scribes. He will be tortured and put to death. And what does Peter say? You probably must know this by heart by now. Oh, God forbid, Lord, that any such thing like that should happen to you. And what does Jesus say? He rebukes him right back. Oh, I'll give you a rebuke and I'll raise you one. Get behind me, you Satan. You are not thinking as God thinks, but as man does. That must have stung Peter. Peter loved Jesus. I think Peter, in his own way, I'm sure, he began to see the truth and the light of God in Jesus. He didn't understand it, I know that. But he loved Jesus and he increasingly believed in him. So it must have stung him deeply when Jesus so sharply said, and even called him Satan, for heaven's sakes. Why did he do that? Because it was hard enough for Jesus. He could not have his closest followers be double-minded. Oh, we love you, Lord. Oh, no, nothing bad could ever happen to you. You're the Messiah. He says, get out of my face. Because there's a cross coming. God, love, and suffering are a mystery. But they're inextricably united, are they not? They are. But even after that, Peter stays. He could have sulked away, gone back to fishing, although he could never caught any fish except when Jesus was around. But it sets the scene, the emotional scene, that anticipates the Transfiguration. Now, it's not clear, biblically, it's not clear that Jesus knew what was going to happen when he got up that mountain. It's really a high hill. I mean, a pretty high hill. Did Jesus transfigure himself? I have to say no. I do not glorify myself. It is the Father's glory. You read that particularly in John's Gospel. Or was it the Father? Something happened between the Father and the Son to bring forth the revelation. Because the work of Jesus was to reveal, to make known to us the glory of God. What is the glory of God? Jesus. Because Jesus is making visible, he's making present in literal, virtual, actual ways what God's like. What is God like? Loving, healing, preaching, raising from the dead, showing mercy, infinite love. And we saw that in Jesus. Jesus is the glory of God. If God the Father had a body, he'd look a lot like Jesus. So again, the event is intended to strengthen the disciples in anticipation of the cross. But it was also, must have been very consoling and confirming for Jesus, who himself had to be blessed. I don't believe Jesus did that to himself. We can't give that kind of glory to ourselves. It had to come from the Father. It had to be a work of the Holy Spirit. So it strengthens Jesus, and it gives the disciples the help they need in anticipation of the cross. It's a gift. Some gifts are hard. Peter, James, and John were terrified when the cloud came and the voice from the heavens spoke. They fell on their faces. But they knew they were in a divine moment. Now, Peter, being who Peter is, even stupefied, you know, he figured he had to say something. He couldn't just be quiet and take it in. He had to say something. Well, let's build three tents. This is really cool. We'll just stay here, you know. And then the scene closes, and Jesus says, "Rise and do not be afraid." Are you afraid these days? Don't be afraid, please. Your faith is too important. This might seem like a sidebar, but I don't think it is. I presume most of us are aware now about bombings in Iran and that. You know how much I love to talk about politics. But I hope there's nobody here, with every love and respect for free choice, I hope there's nobody here that thinks war is a good idea. I have to ask you, I'll just tell you, please don't be afraid. Will you use the power you have? Will you use the glory of God in you and drive God crazy with your prayers so that God hears your prayers and mine, so all this craziness somehow finds a timely end? And somehow this is all related, isn't it? Because if you and I are the glory of God, and we profess Jesus as Lord and Christ, risen from the dead, and we're going to share in that resurrection, we're here to be agents of the gospel that we profess in his name. So we can't hate and be afraid and be, you know, just tied to knots because of the disruptions of the world. Our prayer is so important. And as I said at the earlier Mass yesterday, it used to be in a time, early, at least I'm old enough to know, that when traumatic things in the world happened, people showed up at church. They don't do that anymore. You know what they do? They look at their phones. We had about 42 people for Mass on Wednesday, our Lenten Masses. I was hoping for 300, but 42 is not bad. If you're afraid, and we can't, I can't wash that away with a washcloth, but you keep your eyes on Jesus, and if you're afraid, come to Mass. If you're not afraid, come to Mass anyways. Because it's the most powerful thing we can do. Because it is the dying and the rising, the suffering of Jesus in pure love that saved the world. But we're not quite to the finish line yet. So you do your part. Just complaining and whining and being afraid about it does nobody any good. You've got the power to make a difference. God, love, and suffering, they're a mystery. But they're very real and very present in our world. Mature love changes a person. Mature love transforms. Two of the couples here, I only see one of the couples. There's three couples that are preparing for marriage. Now, without getting into a marriage preparation session. Love changes a person. It's supposed to. It's supposed to transform us. Mature love learns to obey and surrender to the needs and wants of the other person. I don't mean in an unhealthy way. But the love in Jesus led him with the deepest desire of his whole being to surrender in obedience to the Father's love to save the world. The Father didn't want Jesus to die on the cross. He wanted to save the world. It took his death on the cross so that we're saved by the death of God, God's body, God's blood, now raised in the power of the Spirit so that in him now, despite all the hell that's going on earth, we're saved and redeemed. Don't doubt that. It's real. I believe that. I believe what I'm saying. I wish I could talk longer, but I know you don't like that. I love Pope Francis, and I love Pope Leo, too, but this idea, oh, you shouldn't preach for more than 8 minutes. Well, no wonder no Catholics know anything. They watch more commercials in an hour than that. You know what I mean? There. As you know, we don't have a lot of weddings here, but we're going to have at least three this year so far, and it's only February. March today. And you know, I say at most of the weddings, love is a suffering. And inevitably, a grandmother will come up or a favorite aunt will come. Oh, Father, it's such a beautiful day. Don't say that. I said, it's exactly what I should say. Because the beauty and the fresh love of bride and groom and their honeymoon and their wedding day, they don't know what love means yet for them. You see, you fall in love, you have a honeymoon, and then you have a time of dryness or boredom, or it's like, where's the thrill anymore? Then you have to learn how to love. That takes about 65 years. And then the rest of your life after that, then you live love. There's that mystery of God, love, and suffering. That's what I mean. And it's the suffering that purifies the love. You know what I mean? You don't get the one without the other. Love can only mature when we surrender in a marriage one to the other. And I mean that in healthy ways, not in disruptive or manipulative ways. And that process is always painful and it's always resisted. I'm sure into its degree, Jesus too, in the Garden of Gethsemane, oh, Father, take this cup. If this cup can pass me by, please, but not my will, your will be done. It's true in any vocation. It's true in the life of a priest. Like any married couple, the priest has to surrender and give himself to all that's asked of him in the services of vocation for the good of others. It's similarly painful and it's similarly resisted. But those priests and ministers and anybody in a committed relationship or vocation of love, those who do surrender will find a greater peace. They receive a revived energy and an inspired hope. And they can begin to see the fruit of their labor as any married couple would, because love bears its fruit. To accept the suffering that love calls for and the self-giving it demands, at some point, it takes some time, but it opens the eye to see the glory. They're simple, very daily, day-to-day kind of examples. We can just miss them. When my uncle, Father Tom, was coming to the end of his life, I was taking care of him, as you recall. He died in 2017. And he was in Port Huron, where he'd lived for several years. You know, here I was here, and every weekend I'd go up there, and sometimes I'd race up during the week and fill out a bed 3 times at the nursing care, you know, and all of that. But, you know, at once I said, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to relax. I'm going to enjoy the drive. And he loved strawberry shake from McDonald's, and he knew what to do with it. He had dementia. You took him to the dining room table and you sit him there and you put dinner in front of him and you'd say, he would say, well, what's this? What am I supposed to do with this? It's your dinner. Eat it. But if you give him a shake from McDonald's, he knew what to do with that. Well, I got there one day. He was in the hospital at that point. He said, oh, John's here. He relaxed because he knew somebody was there that was caring about him and taking care of him. Day or so later, dear John. Now, that's going to mean a lot more to me than it's going to mean to you. But there's something of the glory of God there, isn't there? He was a good priest for over 50 years. He died peacefully. I wasn't there, but one of my cousins just happened to show up at the right time. And again, they're all just incidences and movements of the glory of God. The Transfiguration is not just a story in the Bible. It's in you. And I think, oh my God, look at the time. I think Peter, James, and John were terrified because what they saw in Jesus, they knew also was in them. All of you have it. You are the light of the world. Don't put a bushel basket on your head because you don't like what's going on in the world. Let your light shine.